Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Ben Neal has been called a creative composer and genius performer by Time Out New York, and a musical powerhouse, a serious and individual talent by Time Out London. Neal's music blends influences from electronica, jazz, and minimalism. In 2014, the Hudson Valley resident received a New York State Council on the Arts Individual Artist Grant to compose Manitoga, a piece named for, inspired by, and performed at Manitoga, the estate and modernist home of industrial designer Russell Wright in Garrison, New York. Ben Neal will perform the piece again at Manitoga's annual open-air performance this Saturday, October 1st at 4 p.m. He joins us now to tell us more. Ben Neal, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, thanks. Yeah.
So let's start with a kind of get-to-know-ya. How long have you been in the Hudson Valley?
I actually moved to the Hudson Valley, to Garrison, New York, from Lower Manhattan the day after 9/11, so 15 years.
Was 9/11 the reason?
No, it was purely coincidental. Yeah, it was just a coincidence, yeah. You know, I always felt that there was a kind of something obviously extremely fortuitous about the fact that I had made these plans to move up with my family at that time, and I've maintained a strong connection with New York, still do, with projects like this and other things that I've done. It's really informed a lot of my work over the last 15 years. Yeah.
When did your relationship with Manitoga develop?
Well, I knew of Manitoga. I had some friends who worked there, and my daughter had spent some time there in one of their summer programs. Vivian Linares, who is program director, approached me in 2013, I believe, with the idea of possibly getting a commission grant to do a piece there. And I was a little bit skeptical, I guess. I was kind of, we could try something. But thanks to her persistence and the wonderful staff and all the support, we were able to get a commission from NISCA for this work in 2014. And now we're getting the opportunity to do it again, which is great.
How did you approach the piece? How do you create music that you write, and this piece in particular?
I'm a trumpet player and composer. Most of my work has revolved in one way or another around this instrument that I designed back in the early 80s, began working on in the early 80s, the Mutant Trumpet. It's an instrument that I originally worked with Robert Moog, the synthesizer inventor, on. He was a big early supporter of mine. Subsequently, I have spent a lot of time over the last 20 years working at an electronic music studio in Amsterdam called Stime, the Studio for Electro-Instrumental Music, and that's where all the technology that I, the custom technology that I use, both the hardware and software, has come from. So a lot of the work that I do, I've done a wide range of different things. I kind of started out in the downtown music scene of New York in the 80s, kind of experimental avant-garde medium, but I was also always very much interested in popular music. One of the things that brought me to being a composer was the fact that I didn't want to just spend my whole life playing classical music as a trumpet player. So I had this notion of creating a vehicle for a compositional outlet, and that's really what the Mutant Trumpet was intended to be. Over the years, it just became more and more the focus of what I was doing. So when I was asked to do this project, I wanted to do something that would very much address the unusual nature of the site. I wanted to think about the site and what could I bring to the piece that would be directly kind of informed by the site. And I went there and spent quite a bit of time there, listening to the sounds, walking around, kind of getting a feel for it. And it's a really remarkable place. It's the word, I believe, means place of great spirit. There is something, there's just something very special about the whole layout, the way that the whole site was sculpted by Russell Wright. It was very inspiring. So I had a project that I had done, a couple of different pieces that I had done with a sculptor artist, Carol Szymanski. She creates these natural horns that she exhibits them as sculptures, as artworks, but they're also playable. Mm-hmm. And we had done several different collaborations together, and I was working with her on some other pieces at this time a couple years ago. And so I got the idea because of the expanse. I wanted to do something that where I would work with an ensemble and really use the outdoor space. So I thought of the natural trumpets, the bugles, as being something that could possibly be effective in that kind of an outdoor setting. So that was the original idea, and I kind of went from there. I started thinking about some of the things of the site to like Revolutionary War history. There's a lot of Revolutionary War history there. So one whole section of the piece is actually, I found this book from the Revolutionary War era of trumpet calls, bugle calls. And so I took those and adapted them. The performing forces are four brass players playing on these natural instruments, and we use the eight instruments that spell out the word Manitoga. And then I am performing on the mutant trumpet, kind of processing and modifying what they are performing electronically. It has a spatial component to it. The performers start out of sight of the audience, so at first you hear the sounds from the distance. Again, almost as if you were in the woods and there was hunting horns or something like that. We have a lot of, evoking of that kind of sound. And then I even thought about some other influences of, there's one section where in using the electronics, I was trying to emulate the sound of a Native American flute, like a Native American kind of a instrument. And well, there's one section also that has some added percussion, which is hand drum, again, sort of a little informed by a more like Native American tribal kind of idea. So it's multifaceted. It's about an hour long, and I have a great group of musicians that have, these instruments they're very unconventional.
Right.
And these brass players have been very enthusiastic about jumping in and learning to play these instruments because they don't play like conventional instruments.
Yeah. That is complicated.
Yeah, it is.
Break it down a little.
Yeah.
So when you say, for people who are only listening this far, that the horns are the letters of the alphabet, mm-hmm. the kind of piping part is in the shape of the letters
right.
that spell out Manitoga.
The way she works is that she designed her own font, and she had basically done a whole set of drawings of the alphabet. Carol Szymanski is interested in this idea of the relationship of the visual representation and the sound of phonemes and letters that make up language. So her idea was to translate. She took these drawings, which are quite abstract renderings of the letters of the alphabet, and then had an instrument maker fabricate the instruments in the shapes of these letters of the fonts that she had done the drawings. So the instruments are created for the visual effect. The sounds that they make are actually arbitrary. To compose for them, it's kind of like a painter being handed, okay, these are your colors that you can work with, mm-hmm. and they might not be the colors that you're used to working with, but it set this kind of limitations on my ability to compose. But I'm very interested in harmonics and overtones, which these natural trumpets are all based on. So it was a very creative process. And again, I had worked with Carol's instruments before a little bit too, so I did have some experience with it. But.
And you said you're playing the mutant trumpet, and you're also processing their sounds through the synthesizer that's involved in that instrument?
Yes, yeah, through live digital processing, which is controlled by my instrument. And in some cases, I have sampled the sounds of the horns, and then so when, say, they're out spread out in the landscape, they'll be playing acoustically, and then I will be sending them back samples of themselves. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of call and response, this whole idea of how brass instruments can be used for communication, and things like that. That's something that I really got interested in with this piece, and I actually am now working on another piece that is kind of informed by this whole idea of the history of, that's how brass instruments started, basically. They were played outdoors for a long time before they were ever actually brought inside to be part of a more conventional musical instrumental ensemble.
Is the piece strictly composed, or is there improvisation?
It's a mixture, but there's a lot of improvisation. There's a lot of room for improvisation. It's all basically we work with stopwatches, so it's all timed out in terms of, and there are some parts where they have written music that they play. Basically, it starts out, I guess I would say it starts out more free. As I said, they're dispersed widely, so you don't really see them at first. And over the course of the hour, they gradually progress, the four brass players gradually progress up toward the house where I'm stationed. And then we play the last two pieces together, which are more conventionally notated pieces, with a percussionist.
The piece is named for the place where you play it.
Right.
Would you play it somewhere else?
Yes, we definitely would. And it would be nice to keep the outdoor element of it, I think. But I've also thought about the possibility of performing it in, say, a large indoor space. I think it could work well even in like a cathedral or a large concert hall. You know, I think it can totally be adapted for an indoor setting or, for other outdoor settings. And I hope that we will have an opportunity to perform it in other places. Yeah.
How did you select the musicians that play it with you?
Basically, are people that I had worked with before, with one exception. One of my the things that I also do is I lead an ensemble of trumpet players that we play the music of Lamont Young, the minimalist composer who was a teacher of mine. And he has a piece for eight trumpets, which I've been doing off and on going back to the mid-80s. And some of these people were actually involved in that. Peter Zumo, the trombonist, is somebody that was part of the whole downtown music scene for a long time, played with the Lounge Lizards and Peter Gordon. He's also a composer, and so it's a group that of people that I kind of have a long history with for the most part. John Thomas is someone that I worked with in the context of Julie Taymor's production of Titus Andronicus. I didn't compose the music for that. Mm-hmm. I was just performing with him. So they were people that I had a long history with, because it's an unconventional thing to have these people show up to a rehearsal and say, okay, here are these weird horns. Figure out how you're going to play what I wrote there.
Right. So. You're the M. So
yeah, exactly.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Jason Covey, James O'Connor, Josh Charles Thomas, and Peter Zumo will play Neil's Manitoga in Manitoga's annual open-air performance this Saturday, October 1st at 4 p.m. Can we go in on the mutant trumpet a little?
Sure.
Can you tell me more about it?
Absolutely. It started off as when I was an undergraduate studying classical trumpet and also starting to get interested in improvisation. One of the things that a lot of contemporary pieces would utilize was a lot of mute changes, timbre changes. So in general, timbre entered the whole vocabulary of contemporary music in the 20th century is kind of equivalent to melody, rhythm, and harmony. So it was always a challenge when you had to play a piece, say the John Cage solo for trumpet from the Concert for Piano and Orchestra from 1957, where you know, you're supposed to have 10 different mutes and you're sticking them in and out. Every note you play has a different sound. And so that was kind of the one of the things that really got me thinking about it originally was, hey, what if I had an instrument where I could have more than one bell? And that way I could work with different combinations of mutes. And I happened to know a guy at the time who had worked at the King Instrument Factory. And it started off as, yeah, almost just like a joke. Hey, let's see if we can stick some things together. So I had a trumpet with a removable bell. I would just stick it onto a regular trumpet. And then eventually we, with this guy Rob Cole, we made the first one, which was, you know, I made it out of just some student trumpets, and I used to carry it around in a laundry bag. And I really developed, though, my whole, when I started working with it, I went to Youngstown State out in Ohio, and this was in the early 80s, and I was very involved in the whole punk new wave scene out there. And that was really the context in which I first really started to compose and improvise and perform with it. But I wanted it to have an electronic component. I was, you know, really inspired by Cage and Stockhausen, some of Stockhausen's works that had combined conventional instrumentation with electronics, and also John Hassell, who was, when I moved to New York, became sort of a mentor figure to me, someone who really encouraged me and introduced me to a lot of the people that I ended up working with because he had also developed a vocabulary of trumpet and electronics. Robert Moog had an ad in Keyboard Magazine. He had sold his interest in the Moog Company, and he was looking for custom projects to work on. And I approached him, and he got very interested in the whole thing. Moog was an amazing person. He was a true music enthusiast, in addition to, of course, being a brilliant engineer. And he put together a custom system for me. That was the first system I had. And then from there on, once I got to New York and I started to do more of my own music and perform more with other people, it kept growing from there. And then the residencies that I had at Stijm in Amsterdam, that started around 1990. And that's what really brought the instrument into the realm of fully interactive computer control. So now it has, the current version has three bells, two normal B-flat trumpet bells, and a third bell that is taken from a piccolo trumpet, a little small bell, which is actually attached to a piece of a trombone slide. So I'm able to do a true glissando. It has two sets of valves that let me switch between those different acoustic timbres, a quarter tone valve, and then it's a fully equipped electronic controller. It has 16 electronic controls, digital controls that can be used to manipulate any kinds of synthesizers or digital audio software. And I also work a lot with interactive video so that my notes and dynamics and my controllers can also interact with images.
Is there anything you can't do?
Well, I constantly am trying to, not so much, the interface hasn't changed that much in the last major update I did to it was in 2008. And the thing is, if you think about the history of traditional musical instruments, it's a slow development. And it takes a lot of practice to get good on something. Like you could always find what's the newest thing, but the newest thing isn't necessarily always the best thing. But so the actual physical interface of it is something that I don't really envision changing too much. But I just keep finding new things to interface it with. It's proven to be pretty adaptable, and I feel like I can, you know, continue to grow with it. And you know, so far I haven't run out of things that I want to do with it. Yeah. So
you, it's adaptable. It's effective. It does what you want it to do, and you're able to learn more things it can do. Aesthetically, it's wonderful, but also still looks very cobbled together.
Yeah.
You could have painted it all one color. but yeah, you haven't.
Yeah.
Why?
That's an interesting question. The cosmetic aspect of it, these instruments are there that it's made from are actually quite old. They go back to like the early 80s. It is made of professional instrument parts, mm-hmm. but I have the idea to have a new one made. I'm hoping that I can do that sometime in the next couple years. Again, I don't anticipate changing the layout of it so much, but there are a lot of new custom instrument builders that are making brass instruments now. Maybe it would be nice to have one that's like all brand new and very slick. Of course, the circuit board will probably be a third of the size of the circuit board that I currently have on there, because in 8 years' time, everything keeps shrinking. But I will say that the cosmetic look of it, I honestly have never really thought about that much.
Well, I think it looks great.
It's a utilitarian thing, but the French dance music duo Daft Punk, in an interview that I remember hearing a few years ago, said something to the effect that the way that they found that they were able to create their music and be so effective with it was by a combination of old and new, and some really old technologies mixed with very new technologies. And this instrument really exemplifies that. The pickup that I use in the mouthpiece is something that goes back to the 70s. It's what Miles, not the same one, but it's the same type of device that was being used when Miles was in his electric period in the 70s when he was playing through wah-wah pedals. It was before clip-on microphones had really been developed that well for trumpet, so they were using those to amplify it. So, for instance, I use that for the pitch sensing so that my notes and dynamics as I'm playing are being translated into MIDI information, the digital interface information. And the way that I'm able to do that is through this pickup that is literally, it's from the 70s. I can't do that math. It's 40 years.
Right.
Yeah. And luckily I have a few of them, because if anything ever happens to that, they're not made anymore, because that technology has been superseded. And so my system is kind of all that. I have some things that go back as far as the 70s. I have some custom things that are new. I also work with very current commercial software like Ableton Live and Max MSP and things like that. So it's a hybrid. The whole concept of it is really that it's a hybrid instrument. It's very important to me that it does have an acoustic component to it. It's not just a purely electronic controller, even though the electronics are a big part of it. And that's been my artistic project, has been to really try to bridge the human physical instrument performance with technology. I mean, when I first started, it wasn't digital, but it's become more and more focused on digital. And I think it's something that's still being worked out. Like, what is live performance in the world where we have all this new technology? Is someone standing pressing buttons on a laptop? Is that a performance? Yeah, I mean, there's so many questions around it. And that's really kind of been my idea, was to create this thing that would be focused on this hybrid synthesis between an expanded instrument, an expanded acoustic instrument, and the electronic vocabulary. And also, hopefully, the main thing is to make music that people want to listen to.
Ben Neal, Jason Covey, James O'Connor, Josh Charles Thomas, and Peter Zuma will play Neal's Manitoga in Manitoga's annual open-air performance this Saturday, October 1st at 4 p.m. Their website for more information is visitmanitoga.org. That link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.